Good evening, everybody, or whatever time it is in your part of the world, since we seem to have quite a international audience these days. Welcome to our regular Thursday stream. This will be a slightly looser themed one. We are doing more friend posting, so hopefully this will be friend posting writ large, as you can see with us as we're talking about Affair looming over the Bliss Hill. We're kind of set behind it in the way that I did it. I kind of did that just for formatting reasons, but it does look like we're looking down on the friend gathering like some kind of Greek gods.
We know
So,
we are guarding the friends.
yes, we are. We'll watch the skies. You watch the hood. But we are joined by a good friend of the channel, and unfortunately, man who is currently full of allergies. Panama hat, say hello there.
Hello, everybody. I'm having quite severe respiratory problems right now. I don't exactly know why. I'm slightly worried that something in my very old house has gone moldy or dusty, or something's died maybe, or I don't know, there's some asbestos in the walls or something. But yeah, my lungs are in very bad shape,
Are
and
you gonna get some sort of horrible turn of the century disease like consumption or something?
I mean, you joke, but I'm quite worried because I've never ever felt like this before. And my lungs aren't working, and I can't cough up whatever's ailing them. If anybody in the chat has any medical knowledge, feel free to give us an E diagnosis in the chat there.
Yeah,
But yes,
so
unfortunately, I'm not on top game today, though I will be getting quite drunk throughout this, so that should help.
That's always a good solution. That's the 19th century answer to respiratory. You're
Yeah.
dying of whooping cough,
Well,
but you can at
yes.
least drink all the gin
Well,
you can handle.
in the American Civil War, I believe this was mostly a Confederate thing. If you were bitten by a poisonous snake, the most well-prescribed cure was to drink 3.5 pints of whiskey. But this just meant that soldiers would get bitten by a snake, then die of alcohol.
Oh yeah, you basically said yourself in like some sort of horrendous toxic shock either way.
Yeah, basically, one or the other will win out.
It's a good thing to do when you've got poison in your system, isn't it? Destroy your liver and kidneys.
Aye, because then the
Well, you know,
poison can't get to it first.
it's yeah, exactly. It's like how you, when you're retreating in war, you burn houses and bridges and things to stop the enemy taking control of them, you know? You burn your liver before the toxin gets to it.
Punch yourself in kidneys. Fuck you, Venom.
Yeah, that's my lever to kill.
We're gonna go through it properly at some point, but I did want to start off the stream quickly by giving our event a bit of a shill, since I'm gonna probably record something with you when you're a bit less sneezy and a bit less allergic, and do a proper announcement since I don't want to leave you out from the process. Since we've already recorded our other two speaker announcements. We've been quite organised. But we do have our Nomos event going on in London on the 29th of October, at which you will be speaking. That isn't really a secret, but
Assuming I make it that far, yes, I will
assuming you
come.
don't die of
Allah
like.
Allah wills that you will make it
Yeah.
that far.
Inshallah, we will have Mr. Panama Hat. But we do run our live events, and we are running one on the 29th of October. It will be in central London, near Islamic, it'll be St. Paul's, and we'll have a lot more exciting announcements as well. Not quite as exciting as Panama Hat speaking, but close. So there'll be a lot of updates about that over the coming 2 weeks as we make the big push before we get about a month out from the event and people get to the payday and everyone buys them all at once, it
Yeah,
seems,
no,
because that's what happened last time.
I'm expecting basically most of the tickets to go after Friday next week. And I did kind of
Yes.
say to people on Telegram, especially if they want an early bird ticket, get them now because they will be gone
Yes.
before probably your payday, possibly.
Well, I'll probably end up reshilling this at the end because we do always tend to gain viewers as these streams go on. But I just wanted to do since I saw it's probably better since Panama has in a bit of a state, bit of a calmer stream, a bit of a looser stream, a bit more of a free format stream. Because there's been a lot going on recently. There's been a lot of historical events, let's say, going on, and I think it's a good time to take stock of. Who are your friends, who aren't your friends, and we'll maybe just go through a couple of news stories and figure out who is and isn't Sfren, as a loose format kind of gimmick, maybe. And we can have kind of Sfren or non-Sfren declarations as the stream goes on, as is our power as the stream sovereigns.
The Sfren doctrine.
The Sfren non-Sfren distinction.
Love me friends, hate me enemies. Simple,
simple
as.
Simple as.
Did you make that meme, Evelyn?
Yes, I did.
Yes, I like that meme.
It's not the one I was looking for, but I still think it suits.
I've only just actually realised that the background for the thumbnail is the Windows login.
Yes.
I've only just realised that.
You've only just noticed it's the Bliss Hill?
I've only just noticed it's the Bliss Hill, which they actually found, didn't they?
They did.
They tracked down the photographer who took it and sold its windows for like $15, you know.
Yeah, it was on like it's a stock photo, basically. It's from like Adobe Photos.
Imagine if that dude got royalties. He would be rolling in it.
I mean, he's probably quite upset that he didn't he? You know? It sort of couldn't really tell. Isn't it like the guy that sold the smiley original smiley face cartoon? For like $12 or something. You know?
Yep. Or the dude that got Windows bought from him in like a gas station parking lot by Bill Gates.
Yeah.
For like $50,000.
Just before we move on, somebody's asked me a question. Madeline Brooks says, "What's your approach to learning history?" Been very impressed with your vast knowledge. Well, I wouldn't call it that, but I'd say so. I'm a bit of a cheat, because as much as I like the sort of trad scholarly approach with just, you know, being surrounded by a fortress of books, one of the great advantages of being online and living in this day and age is that you have access to websites like JSTOR, where you just have an endless repository of historical and all the other topics as well, all kinds of papers and specific things. So once you've got a topic you're interested in, then you can just like endlessly autistically research that one thing, and get all the different historical takes and things, whereas back in the day you would have had to have been a university scholar to get that kind of research, but now you can just do it on your own. And the other thing is, I would say just read for pleasure. That's what I do. I'll just order or buy books, and if they vaguely interest me, and then just read them for pleasure, you know, rather than doing anything else.
You think someone would just do that? Open a book and read?
Well, I think the thing is as well, is what do you want out of learning history? Are you just reading it because it's interesting, or, you know, and kind of the way I've done, you know, or are you reading certain elements of, say, the period between 1900 to 1945 and studying political theory and its developments across that? Because I think that sort of, if you know how specific the investigation you want to engage in is, it helps you search for stuff. And you're not just looking at, as you say, you know, almost in a certain sense, you know, it's like, oh, well, let's learn about the Roman period. And then you've got 1,000 possible books you could read. At least if you know you want to learn about, you know, oh, how did Roman agriculture work? So you can at least kind of thin it down somewhat.
Yes. Also, I mean, the thing is, I don't think there's any real sort of bad way to do it. I mean, just have a topic that interests you, sit down and leaf through the book on it, you know, sort of have a, you know, just you can, you can. I know some people who read history, well, myself included, read history for escapism, you know. A lot of the time, a good history book reads better than a novel, you know, and it actually happened. So, you know, it's just fun. That's a, Ever since I was a kid, I've just liked reading that kind of thing. It's good.
Oh, that image you posted has big energy to it. Before we move on as well, I forgot to do my normal boilerplate stuff. If you want to ask us any questions or just support the stream, the best way to do that is through our Streamlabs link. That will take the least cut. But we are still somehow monetized by YouTube. The Eye of Sauron hasn't quite noticed us yet. So we do have super chats available. We have memberships available. So if you want to support or ask questions that way, that's all open to you. Just normal YouTube-y stuff. As always, I will make myself feel dirty and say, You will see these streams better if you like and subscribe. If you interact with the video in any way, if you like the video, if you comment on it, basically, it's the only way to stop YouTube from suppressing this. Like, you have to tell YouTube you like things because it's such a terrible service that you being subscribed or you coming and looking at the channel sometimes isn't enough.
See,
So, yeah,
I
you.
don't want to interrupt you, but I've just noticed now that I've replaced the image of one great bald man with another. That on the right hand side here, one in from the edge, is that like Maradona? I'm seeing the Brazil strip.
Possibly? I don't know.
I also hope everyone appreciates this image of Dave Courtney. Oi, son, don't be refilling those meds.
Those images meant to be on the stream.
It's in the general, we've got it in the general chat.
Oh, I see.
What's
Okay.
that the gangster image with the big energy is what we've currently got on stream.
So shall we say maybe it'll be impolite, what the original, why are we originally going to stream on the 22nd?
Or the yeah, so we're going to stream today with Philosopher Cat on some more Evola stuff related to some of the conversations we've had before, and I think we're going to try and reschedule that. So it might be a while, and it's probably a
Yes.
good thing because it gives me longer to do other stuff and then get back to reading it. But no, we're going to talk about the metaphysics of sex. And again, I think in that book he has. You know, it's something maybe we can talk about as a little bit as part of this. I think that we need to, in our sort of spheres, a view of sex, sexuality, and intimacy that isn't just repeating boomer con stuff, but also isn't, you know, sort of wavy enough that postmodernism can kind of attack it. And I
Yeah.
think Evola, by trying to construct almost a platonic form of male and female and a version of sexuality that sort of implicitly comes from that, is onto something a lot better than just, you know, people taking what the left says and turning it on its head, or just repeating what their boomer grandparents say.
Yes. And I also think that, you know, this is one of the many great things about Evola is that he was kind of one of the only really right-wing philosophers who worked in that tradition where he would just take an idea, take it to its absolute limit, and, you know, create a book, you know, write something scholarly on the subject. And, you know, he actually does perhaps one of the only, maybe other than Georges Bataille or D.H. Lawrence, maybe even Mishima as well, one of the few authors who actually did a deep dive on sexuality and the very heart, the very essence of meaning of masculine and feminine and whatever else, and it actually, you know, something interesting and positive actually came out of it.
It's not materialist. I think that's the problem with so
No,
many of the views on the right nowadays, is they are so painfully materialist. I remember at
without
one point
realizing.
in Metaphysics of Sex, he talks about, I can't remember the name of it, but some tribe where they actually didn't have a recognition that sex was how you procreated. They didn't have a material link or understanding between the two. They thought that, you know, one and the other were just separate magic rituals. And in a certain sense, I really appreciate that those people had such a view of it that they, even though these things now we take for granted are materially linked, they didn't see one because they were aware of so many other things at the same time.
I love as well the people who you can tell are like the 15-year-old or the fed LARP writers who figure out that the metaphysics of sex exist, figure out what Evola's position on the metaphysics of sex was, and then immediately like start a meltdown, or they disavow him as a kook and a mystic, and they think Evola actually is like the weird cartoon version of him that Wikipedia puts up, rather than the esoteric mystic he actually was, who speaks on many different subjects in a way that is not compatible with like the Ben Shapiro empiricism of what has become like the caricature of modern conservatism.
Yes, and this also ties into this kind of two-pronged issue where people on the right, and in the dissident right, you know, this is a kind of all-reaching problem. They're not properly educated. And the issue with this, essentially, is because, of course, the academies and all the institutions have been captured and are ineffective or wouldn't let us in. But we haven't replaced it with anything of our own yet. So we have all these young men with a very schizophrenic education. They know bits and pieces of things. They started, starting your philosophical, metaphysical education with Evola. It's like learning to drive in a Boeing 747.
It's like learning to drive in a Mura.
It's like learning to drive a car by piloting a Zeppelin. It's too far up to begin with. You shouldn't begin with someone like Evola. And of course, the issue is that in Evola's day, anybody who was able to engage with his material, you could have taken it for granted that they would have had a basic philosophical education. And you don't need much more than that. But you do need a basic grasp of, Western metaphysics, basically. The simple stuff, Aristotle, Plato, all the Greeks, some German, but Evola doesn't really draw from the Germans as much as he draws from the Greeks anyway. Maybe some scholasticism. I was lucky because I had some background in philosophy before I started with Evola. But yes, and in fact, I found Metaphysics of Sex to be one of the most challenging books of his. I didn't, which it doesn't seem that way, perhaps, but it is. It's genuinely quite a challenging book, and it's not often held up to be. It's actually one of his more forgotten works. It's not as well known as Revolt or Ride the Tiger, perhaps because it is so specific in its scope, which is somewhat rare for a Evola book. But yeah.
That was going to be the theme of this stream, though, but we are having to postpone that one
Yes,
for another wide discussion of the philosophy.
we're not supposed to be talking about
Oh,
metaphysics.
no, we can talk about what we want. Like I said, it's kind of a loose format. I guess it's got a good intro for people who aren't
Sit
familiar with
here and have a drink and ramble.
Yeah, pretty
Yeah,
much.
that's what we'll be doing. There's a couple of framing points I wanted to use, but it's not that solid.
It also
And
means I just get to put all my good OC memes on the stream because I don't get to put them on Twitter anymore, so.
well, there you go. And
There we go, you, exclusive memes.
the thing is, this to me, whenever I meet with Scrum and Evelyn in real life, it's always one of the highlights of my year, basically. Because we always meet at some pub or some place where, even if we're just at a private location, there'll be lots of alcohol, there'll be things being smoked, all sorts of nice things. And the conversation is just the most like clear-cut, like based conversation I will have. There's nobody else I will go to meet in the Dissident Right where the conversations will be that good. So this to me is just that, but on a live stream, honestly. I just, you
Well,
know,
I
sit.
coming from yourself, I appreciate that. I mean, I think to tie it back to the loose theme, that's something that I actually talked to a few people about at Witan was this sort of idea that, do they in a fairly often manner get to confidently talk about the ideas and concepts that we talk about in this sphere, online often, but not necessarily that you've got to go to the pub and, burst everyone's ear off with, oh, here, have you heard about this guy called Evola, blah, 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 blah. But when it comes up in conversation, I do worry that some of the people who are in our sphere who would be very confident online would not then be able to engage in the same sort of a way when it comes to dealing in real life.
Yes,
I mean,
and
in that
also
same sense, it's as you're sort of saying, it's not even necessarily just private venues. When we met in London for the cathedral event, that some of the basket weaving people had put on, we sat in pubs in London and pretty public places and just had all sorts of conversations. Not giving a whit whether someone bats an eye or gives you a funny look.
because no one's really listening. And if they are, they can't really understand what you're saying. So this is what I've learned, is that you can have extremely base conversations in the middle of a crowded London pub or on the tube or whatever, because people just aren't interested. We don't really live in an age where people will actually sort of listen to you, if they hear you speaking. That's what I found anyway. You can get away with a hell of a lot.
And if they do, they'll have no idea what we're talking about.
No,
'Cause
exactly.
we've reached such a state of like inside rhetoric that we go from extremely dense academic language into calling each other friend and saying hello. And basically, it's a mix of like high academia and baby talk, which is yes. which makes it almost completely impenetrable to the initiated.
Memes, and also just all the jargon we have, you know.
That's a good way to know who your friends are. We have these inbuilt. God damn it! So I just saw what you posted. I forgot I made that one. These very esoteric and sometimes slightly schizo. You know, get that meme up. We can talk
about
that.
That's what I'm gonna
meme.
Do.
Because this is one of our great blue beam memes with the projection of the Kabar and the spaceships being the Kabar.
See, we'd probably get a fat wow on us for showing this, but it's
it's just like in the hoodie.
I must just one last point on the issue with
go on, yeah.
The right wing here is that what this means is that you'll get people who pick up a strain of thought like Evola, and then maybe they'll get it right. Then they'll just fall into these terrible like materialist, rationalist enlightenment traps, like very easily. You know, they'll become really based on one area and then just go completely off the rails in another, just because they've not had a general philosophical historic education. I feel
I was gonna say I think it goes even deeper than that, really. I think the term to transcend liberalism is actually very accurate. To really understand, you know, for me it wasn't so much Evola, but reading older thinkers like Carlyle and then seeing some of it really formalized in a reactionary thinker like Yawkey, that, you know, to transcend liberalism as a spiritual thing, it requires you as a modern person to really go right back to basics with not even how you think about philosophy, but you know, language, how you interact with people, the things that you take for granted and don't, and how that a lot of those are actually completely inverted from the world people lived in even 80, 90 years ago.
Yeah. No, that's completely true.
I these things always do come to the surface better when you are able to talk in person. I will continue my shilling of not just our event, but just like going out and doing things in general with your fellow dissidents. Because it is so important, and it does allow you to kind of accelerate this. If you don't have more of a general philosophical background, if you don't feel like you have a grounding in these areas, being around people who do, or being around people who are going on the same journey as you are, will greatly aid you in that process. So that's one of, I think, one of the strong points when you get people who are doing things like basket weaving, or just meeting up and meeting at events, or just seeing each other in a completely informal way. They're just actually able to support each other with that process, and better able to, one, filter reality, and two, build upon those kind of basic building blocks when you have someone to do it with. I think a lot of people have just been trying to do it on their own too much. They've kind of been an island, and that's not been the healthiest thing for this community.
Well, yeah, it's like, and imagine trying to study maths without a maths teacher. Where would you start?
Yeah,
exactly. You know, we, I think, are too complacent in letting everybody wander off down their own path. We really do need a parallel academy or some kind of institution that can build up a kind of orthodoxy, because you need that. You know, you can't have this commune of completely free-thinking people, because you'll just go around in circles making the same errors, you know, and not getting anywhere. You do need a basic level of orthodoxy in all
matters. Well, yeah, you need your imperium, almost. You're sort yeah. of... You're... You need your way in which you justify your right
here
to
come
rule.
The 40k fags. Did someone say Imperium? Miniatures fall out of pockets. Sorry, go on. I understand your point. You need that like central core authority. You need someone that actually sets the tone, sets the standard, and holds people to it. Sorry, I completely destroyed the conversation with a 40k joke there.
All right. Well, I don't know. Maybe we can carry on to the maybe a somewhat worked example of this, which is all this nonsense going on in Leicester at the moment with essentially the forces and police forces and media sort of in one big fell swoop are having to admit that there's a kind of race war going on. But
It's
it's race war, no whites allowed.
yeah.
Yeah.
It's the Bollywood edition. They're all gonna
Yeah.
dance. Is they're all gonna dance at each other.
I mean, I've not paid an extreme amount of attention to it. I've seen it pop up here and there. It seems like there is constant attempts to try and tie a narrative to what is just like plain and simple sectarian and ethnic violence. You know, they're like, oh, well, it was about a cricket match. It was actually about a protest. It was about this, it was about that. And it's like, well, no, it's actually about the fact that a Muslim group basically graffitied a Hindu temple, and then you started having escalating gang fights, as happens in all multiracial communities.
But I mean, you know, it's sad because it's like, well, we all know that immigration is bad and has done irreparable damage to the face of this country. And then you look at that and it's like, well, you know, why is nobody saying, I know that the media is obviously paused, but imagine if one of them just said the question on everybody's mind, which is, why do we have to have it here on the other side of the world, on a small island of the Atlantic? Why is it happening on our soil? It shouldn't be.
Well,
These
that's
people should
the.
be. Have no right to be here. No valid reason
Well, that's
to
what I was
be
going
in
to say. But the only quote unquote right wing response that you've really had to this happening is the Daily Mail making a point about how integration hasn't worked.
course, it
And
hasn't.
not that they're saying integration can't work, they're just saying that this one time, because of these, environmental and institutional reasons, it hasn't worked. And it's something I've been thinking about more and I want to have an investigate into properly, but it seems quite difficult when you try and look up the term. But
I
where does this sort of sociological construct of integration and assimilation come from? It must just be a subversive notion. It never at any point has someone who is, a positively right-wing sort of individual throughout history thought, well, yeah, if we bring the immigrants here and we integrate them into our culture, that view is so modern. That is not the view people had even in, the North of England 40, 50 years ago, or even earlier than that, was the fact that you could not bring these people and have them be British, either culturally or otherwise.
I mean, of course not. But I think the so, something at play here is that if you go to a leftist, like a sort of shit lib type, and you say, I don't think integration is possible and immigration just hasn't worked, and they go, don't be ridiculous. You know, that look, they'll find a bar and they'll go, look, see that there's a group there who's got, you know, one of them's black or one of them's Indian or whatever or whatever. And the thing is, well, I think because modern whites, modern British people especially, are so deracinated from any kind of tradition, any kind of culture, any kind of metaphysical hard point in anything. But of course, in a sense, integration does work because you're so taken down from what you were
Well, that's this is.
Englishman, a Brit, a Scot, a Welshman, an Irishman, that you don't have anything that would stop you integrating. And then you contrast that to what we've seen recently, where Muslims and Hindus are just going at it. Because obviously, some Muslim or Hindu immigrant from India or Pakistan or wherever, they don't they're able to get on with whites wherever they need to, but they have that hard cultural, religious, literally metaphysical check on integration with, you know, a Muslim or a Hindu or vice
It's
versa.
very funny because they're both the same people. Like, ethnically, Indians and Pakistanis are not very well separated, especially with the way a lot of them moved, kind of switched places when India and Pakistan was set up. I like your whole thing about calling them Indo-Paks
Yeah,
as a way to
it's
make
the
them really
Indo-Pac
angry.
region.
Subcontinentals, you know.
Well, I was going to say related to.
Also, just a very, very quick one. We have had a donation that's only just popped up. Well, it was about 20 minutes ago. Seasider donated $10, thank you, and just said friend books, which is funny because it's 10
Aw,
bucks.
thank you.
Thank you for the friend books.
No, I was going to say that the other side of the coin as well is that if these people are assimilated into your population, you have to change for them in some ways. And this is something that's actually admitted now. I think one of the things I was trying to read into was some open borders policy think tank kind of thing that's a tributary of Soros organization or this, that, and the next thing. And they openly say, you know, our vision of assimilation is one in which both the native population and the migrating population come together and adapt to one another. And I think that's only possible because I was going to say as well, Tom Peace in chat said, when did tolerance become a British value? Tolerance was a British value, but it was tolerance between and for British people. And that was basically taken advantage of because, oh, well, we start calling brown and black people exactly. Brits now. So they're now, you know, the sort of naive white person has now got to treat this British person, quote unquote, in the same way that they treated their ancestors.
It's a very important point you just made because progressives don't attack, they subvert.
Yeah.
You know, they will take something like the British history of tolerance or whatever, as it meant, you know, back in the day, and they'll subvert it and say, well, this means that we're going to import, you know, 100,000 African steel city, you know, 100,000 Indian steel city, you know.
It's this ridiculous gaslighting as well, where the idea of tolerance is turned up so far that when these things happen, the rhetoric is, we have failed these people. Our country has failed in its obligation to integrate them. How this is a function of our inbuilt Western white racism. We have failed these communities. Their lack of integration is evidence of our failure, a lot of it is sold to us.
If you look at it from a certain point of view, one of the factions of the octopus, to use AA's analogy, one of those factions, quite a powerful one in the regime, genuinely does want what they would call integration. And by that, what they mean is they want every one of those young, angry, Muslim, Hindu men. They want them to be like the powerless, like soyish, like sort of.
What a bugman them, yeah.
You see on the adverts, you know, they want them to just be what a lot of white British men are now. You know, they're just the completely consumerist, deracinated, fungible man. You know,
book status so, broken.
So from their point of view, these riots are worrying because they're saying, well, it's been what, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 years in some cases, in some communities in this country, and they're still getting Hindu-Muslim rioting, you know? What it means is that they have not been able to separate the newcomers from their traditional culture and faith. And to them, to certain sections of the regime, that is a worry, it's a loss, because
they've not been able to turn people into like Homo Briticus, like Homo Blairicus,
yes,
like turn these people into this like literal manifestation of civic nationalism,
yes,
that they will become the bonkers British, Stormzy British, Kerry Knight British brilliantness of all the bonkers Brit stuff.
You're completely
that we
right.
always make jokes about. That you know, this brilliant, brilliant multiracial British.
It's,
Boris is.
It's
is
coronation chicken. It's Patak's rice with Union Jack flags on him. What more could you want?
Look at like the average like Tory Twitter account, right? Like the really pro Tory Twitter account. And it'll just be pictures of them with like Sikhs and turbans and like black guys in suits and stuff. Like, oh look, Tories, yay! You know. That's the face of the regime. That's what they want. They want this multi-ethnic, but also somehow vaguely British identity. It's never going to happen.
I'm almost with AA at this point. That this is just a long-winded way for Blair to engage in some sort of racial mass political lynching.
Well, the thing is, I mean, yes. But Blair's these past few weeks, AA has actually convinced me that Tony Blair's motives and goals may be far less predictable than we thought, and what he's going to do. So, what exactly his political lynchings will be remains to be seen. I think
there's a song, not to interrupt too harsh, but there's a song that always sticks in my mind when we talk about this stuff by that horrible, like, festering cultural wound that is Billy Bragg, if you know who he is.
Oh,
He wrote
Jesus.
a song called Half English, which is quite literally this. Let me read you some of these lyrics, because they are amazing. They are the actual epitome of what we're talking about. It says, "My mother was half English, and I'm half English too. I'm a great big bundle of culture tied up in red, white, and blue. I'm a fine example of your Essex man. I'm well familiar with Hindustan, 'cause my neighbors are half English and I'm half English too."
Oh, Jesus.
My breakfast was half English, and so am I, you know. I've had my plate of maritime soldiers washed down with a cappuccino. I'll have a veggie curry about once a week, and then next day I'll fry it up as bubbling sweet, 'cause my appetite's half English, and I'm half English too.
I mean, again, it's the subversion. Because I mean the thing is, this is one of the big problems that faces the right is when you try to get these things down to brass tacks, because all peoples, all nations are, technical terms, in some way a mixture of other things, or they came from something, they're influenced by different things, you know. This is not news to anybody, I don't think. But again, they'll take that, they'll subvert it, they'll go, ah, yes, what that means is that everybody's going to eat curry half the time and
Let's
taste things.
big up the conflagration nation.
Exactly.
It's
Exactly.
the whole psychic damage the Americans have, where they think everywhere's a nation of immigrants because they don't have any culture past about 300 years ago.
Yes.
But no, you're right in that there's this idea that's kind of the a lot of people rant on at kind of the cartoon drawing of postmodernism that they've got in their heads. But it is one of the wider points. They take the idea that it's true that everyone comes from somewhere else, basically, and they put it into that, say that these communities that have been here for thousands of years don't exist, and that differences that developed in that time aren't real. And basically, it's a reductivist argument. It's like, well, since we all came out of Africa and we all evolved from the same black person, then one big human race, herd d'oeuvre, why does it matter? We're all big black science man stardust. You're all a tiny part of a giant machine. Go and watch Hollywood movies until you die. That's all there is, and that is what the inside of these people's heads looks like when it's fed to them. And it's very, very depressing, but that is, when you get down to it, that is really where the bug man comes from. It's the we are all stardust mindset of making you feel like a very, very small part of a very, very big but empty, godless world.
Yes.
Oh no, dead air.
Well, yeah, essentially.
No, that about sums it up. What was the one I sent you? I'll open up another. This is from some guy,
Whoops.
Steve Law's report, Serco Landlord Scheme. I suppose this is somewhat immigration related as well.
Oh
Serco
God,
the
the Serco.
yeah.
Well, I don't think we've. I don't. We'll talk about. I don't think I've got to the end of the stuff we need to talk about with the riot stuff, because.
We can't just do rank punditry. Come on.
Well,
There's
I was going to say it's interesting though, because this shit's kind of mad. This is not rank, and I've seen
no,
no one else talk
it's
about this.
they're good jump. We kind of use them as jumping off points anyway. But the one thing I went to talk about, there's this Evening Standard article here that says the Leicestershire riots shows us how useless the BAME label is now, and it's this like limited hangout. I think the full thing's behind a paywall, but.
I've got the whole article. Well, I've got the whole
Yeah,
article here, I think.
contemporary Britain is far from perfect, but it's one of the most successful liberal and democratic multicultural nation states in his. It really is like the ultimate
Which
small admission of
paper
the
is this
big
in?
problem.
Which paper is this in?
Evening
Oh,
Standard.
it's in the Standard, yes.
Okay.
I've got put it in the general chat, but yeah, it's this. It's from this black author, basically, Tom Iwula Owundali.
But this is actually
Oh,
interesting because
whoa.
a lot of the blacks that you see or that you meet
Oh,
that are kind
whoa.
of at his level of education where they're kind of writing articles in the press and stuff, they tend to have the same issue that the average his white counterpart would have, in that he is also very deracinated. He doesn't really have a culture. All he has is I'm black. He doesn't actually have anything to cling on to beyond that a lot of the time, or very little. And so that's why, you know, he's saying, well, you know, I'm a BAME or whatever, you know, I'm a minority, I have, you know, I'm black this and black that. But he is still very far away from that young Muslim man or that young Hindu man who is running around with a club or a can of spray paint, like fighting and vandalizing the enemy, you know, in Leicester or whatever.
There's an aspect, at least those people have something they're willing to fight for, literally. Mm. I mean, it may be a fucking stupid Indo-Pak, interconflagration, but at least there's something that motivates these people to go out into the streets and do something. They don't just sit there tutting on their Nintendo Switches.
Well, it's interesting, because a form of metaphysically inspired do-or-die religious strife has flared up in the heart of the pots, in the heart of the global homo regime. You know, it's like, how did this happen? You know, it's clearly something isn't being done quite right from the point of view of the leaders here. You know, it's. Maybe this will get them to rethink. And just on a sort of as an adjacent to this point, if anybody wants to know how bad this can get, just go on the Wikipedia page for the partition of India. 1947, the partition of India into India and Pakistan. If you really want to know how serious this can get, because I think in the course of sectarian violence in a sort of less than 2 years, about like 25 million people died.
Well, that's cheery, that.
Yeah, just you know, because Hindus and Muslims, you know, for it's weird because for many centuries they did indeed get on very well living together in India. And then it all just, you know, it all started to come apart. So, yes, they really will go the whole hog. They will just, like, they will just ethnically cleanse villages near them that are full of Hindus if they're Muslims, or Muslims if they're Hindus.
So, well, no, I don't know. I feel like breaking into a version of, like, Ebony and Ivory, but it's, like, Pajit and Abdul.
Well, no, I was going to say, I remember when there was the whole, like, Rohingya Muslim, quote-unquote, genocide going on in, like, Malaysia. And it was reported in news in the West as if, like, these native Malaysian populations were just butchering Muslims for no reason whatsoever. And then you look back and you go, oh, wait, these Muslim people are basically sort of the leftover from a conquering force that murdered, you know, as many people as they needed to. They're basically just getting their own back.
That's true. And, of course, the other thing is... I forgot what I was going to bloody say now. I'm really not well. I had something in mind that I had a very good point to make about. Oh, yes, that's right. I saw one headline. I didn't read the article. It was just a headline I scrolled past that was trying to blame Modi, the Prime Minister of India. They were trying to blame him for this, saying that his populist right-wing Hindu rhetoric...
Yes, I think we've got the Guardian link for that.
But wasn't it the Muslims that started the riot, though? It wasn't the Hindus that kicked it off.
It's a bit of a tit-for-tat thing. I think blaming... The fact that it's simmering sectarianism, like, is enough. The funny thing about the Guardian thing is they have to have this neat narrative of a victim and a perpetrator, when really it is just the simmering sectarian incompatibility of having both a Hindu and Muslim and Pakistan and Indian community in the same town.
They can really understand it, though, to be honest. People,
no.
They wouldn't be able to understand kind of ethnic.
I mean, if it continues on, they'll draft some crap up to make Modi look like some sort of Hindu Osama bin Laden, at which point he might actually be very based.
Well, I mean, I've got some fairly vague knowledge of his government and kind of his political ideology. And he is kind of... again, it's difficult to equate the politics of a continent, because India isn't really a country, it's a continent that has been unified.
Yeah, it is.
Quite artificially, in my opinion.
They have a lot of languages.
At the end of the empire. And the thing is that trying to get the politics of that across to people in Britain is a bit awkward, but basically, he is the leader of a kind of like pop, like right-wing populist nationalist party that is, of course, it's difficult because India is so multi-ethnic and so quite literally multicultural. But it's difficult to say, oh yeah, he's just a Hindu nationalist, because there's a lot more to it than that. But a lot of his rhetoric and a lot of his kind of mimeticism and what got him, elected as prime minister comes from a kind of very forthright, quite militant idea of India as a Hindu state. And he's not what you'd call anti-Muslim, but he does love to bait Pakistan in terms of foreign policy a lot.
I think
He's willing to push escalation with Pakistan to buy up more support for his domestic policies at home, by the
I
looks
just
of it.
wanted to say before it's too far past. Aurelian Nautis Caesar gave us a $5 donation in the super chat and said he's swung round from our opinion and said the Queen isn't dead. She is just hiding to build her final order. Is she behind the moon with a Nazi flying saucer fleet?
Well, I've actually heard news that very soon we're going to have a pawn across the other side of the board, so the Queen will be right back.
See, I also wonder though. Is an article like this appearing in The Guardian not just because it's convenient to write something about a Hindu nationalism and right wing, or sorry, right wing ideology? Is there also a possibility that what we are seeing there is literally just like the Muslim in-group influence in media circles?
Quite possibly, because there are a hell of a lot more Muslims than there are Hindus. Hindus are genuinely, compared to all the Muslims around, Hindus are a very small minority, I believe. And they're quite concentrated, I think, into smaller areas. And a lot of them, well, they don't have the street presence that Muslims do, I don't think.
No,
They
not
don't
at
have
all.
the numbers and the brute sort of chimp energy that the Muslims do. The Muslims have basically millions of 20 something inbred sort of cousin bred young men who wear their weird little robe and little skull cap
You see him.
and are willing to you'll if you live in a moderately sized city or town in the UK, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Just endless numbers of these young men just walking around everywhere,
If you go to the wrong end of where we are, we're at the nice end of our town. We go to the other end of it. It is just seas of these people. You see them all over in their traditional dress, and it's very. There's a lot of like street presence, both with if you look at the Hindus that were protesting and just the Muslims in general. They have a very good grasp of like street presence and how to take over an area and how to do the opposite of integrating and how not to integrate. And that there's very little, you're right. The system is going to have to find a way of dealing with these people because there really isn't anything that they've come up with that can kind of break it. The liberal order doesn't work. And again, there's another donation here that kind of goes into this a little bit. It says, I don't believe it's pure Americanism. Sorry, this is Chloe with a $3 donation. If you look at liberalism, they believe in the universal man as a cog in a societal machine. So what argument is there in liberalism against migration? I would say that also John Locke didn't view black people as human. He was quite pro-slavery in some of his rhetoric, which is an interesting one. I think it kind of goes into the idea that was slightly controversial from one of the students we have. But basically, liberalism only really works for the people who came up with it in the classical sense. As we said, it's a Western idea for Westerners, by Westerners, of Westerners. It's a white European idea, and it only really works in a white European context for other white Europeans. Once you introduce the Indo-Pax into it, all of that breaks down. And that's what the liberal order in a modern sense is having trouble dealing with. They've brought all this, they've brought about this multicultural society, and it is not compatible with the older version of their kind of ethical morality system. It's not compatible with what Britain was, and it's not really compatible with the rhetoric about what they want Britain to become. So they're kind of stuck in this situation where they kind of have to pretend it's not happening and hope it goes away.
Oh, I did notice anyone that was looking at the Telegram earlier on today, there was a video from West Yorkshire Police who have recently bought an all black armored sort of what I could only describe as like Troubles spec APC thing. Not even like a converted Land Rover, like a full on like IED proof, you know, military vehicle. And that's now
about
doing
an MRV, a mine resistant vehicle.
Yeah, that's now doing the rounds in Bradford.
I love that they're always claiming that the police can't do their most basic functions because they're overstretched, they got no money. Then they're just buying just full-on armoured person.
Was this on Twitter?
It was on Telegram. The traditional Britain group people shared it.
Alright. I need to find this then, because West Yorkshire police with an MRV is hilarious. They're going to turn Bradford into the fucking Iraq green zone.
I think they're preparing for Bradford to get a bit Leicester, if you ask me.
No, because here's the thing. This will keep happening, and it will keep getting worse and worse and worse until something happens. Until, we can't just like, what is the regime gonna do about this? Because it can't integrate them. Really, it's tried to. You. I'm sorry, but you're never gonna turn hordes of Syrians, Pakistanis, and Indians into like docile soy men. As hard as you try, you're not going to be able to do it. Those men are just not cut out for that. They're cut out for life in the northwest frontier or in Bengal or wherever they come from. I mean, you know, you can't, like, are they just going to keep arming the police more and more to try and drive through Bradford?
Yeah,
or
they did that. I mean, they did that in Northern Ireland for nearly two decades. They're prepared for it.
Yes, but what's the end goal then of the regime?
There isn't one.
Well, I mean, you're probably quite right, but you're just going to end up with basically a state in which you have a minority of docile, quite frightened whites.
Well, that
cities full of just like raging, ethnically charged.
As you say, this is the point. He's been making though.
Brazilification is the process that's referring to.
For whatever you say about him, Tony Blair is thinking on, maybe not even to get into his values, but just from a more kind of functional perspective, he is thinking on a longer time frame. He is sort of acting as an oligarch for Britain and has been before his premiership and afterwards. So, you know, as you say, that our leaders currently cannot solve this problem because they are not willing to deal with the short-term loss of having, you know, that it looked bad for them in front of their voters that they are basically beating Muslim gangs up and down streets in the North of England and restoring order. However, if Tony Blair runs around with some think tanks and can influence how the police works and get them to all clamp it down, then that, you know, maybe it doesn't necessarily teach us what his vision is, but clearly his vision is one that's further away than just thinking about tomorrow or thinking about next week's poll results or whatever.
Well, I mean, you know how clearly the community leaders of the Muslims, especially, I don't really know about the Hindus. I've never actually encountered really any of them around here. But do you know how the Muslim leaders, they clearly don't give a crap about the UK, right? Mm. They're just there because it's they're less likely to get blown up than they are in wherever they come from. I mean, all they care about is maintaining their community and their religion in some way. My question is, given their numbers and their concentration, why haven't they just started their own party and elected their own people
to
parliament?
Well, they have.
Yeah, no, they basically run local councils and areas they live in, and they don't bother with the local MP doesn't come into that area because the local council deals with it via the mosque.
There's an agreement that the Labour Party has that certain local chapters of Labour in South Manchester, in Bradford, in Birmingham, in areas of London, are basically ethnic parties. They exist as their own local kind of ethnic Muslim party.
And is this an openly sanctioned policy?
Yes. There's all Muslim shortlists in many wards in all these areas. They have all like imam approved Muslim shortlists of who the councillors will be, who the MP will be. That's how these areas operate. And it is a give and take between the Labour Party and these communities that they are allowed to essentially run their own affairs if they wave a red flag and if they count in the great kind of bean counting game of democracy towards Labour. They are essentially allowed to be their own fiefdoms, their own Islamic fiefdoms and parties. That's where they have their own legal system, their own madrasas. That's how that all operates. Because the Labour Party goes, as long as you, even in name only, are Labour, and these are Labour areas with Labour victories, you can do whatever you want. The all-Muslim shortlists have been a contentious point in these areas for over a decade. I used to work in a place called Denton, and that's one of the worst areas for it. They've had all-Muslim shortlists for MPs and councillors there really since about 2004, 2005. And that really was in the wake of all the race riots that happened there, that they were essentially handed their own politics to their own ethnic and religious interests. And the Labour Party, to their kind of political Machiavellian credit, has been able to do that maneuver, but they've done it because they don't care about these areas.
It was
willing to essentially surrender them.
It's the same policy the British employed in setting up the Middle East. Give the tribal leaders sovereignty and let them do as they please in their area. It's literally the exact same policy almost. No wonder it's turned into, you know, constant ethnic conflicts between these groups.
There's one of the only postal fraud investigations in the UK for elections was due to Birmingham-based Islamic councillors, that they were going around and essentially stuffing ballots with the harvested votes of like Asian elders to support the Labour Party.
It is interesting, isn't it? Because the more I look at it, I mean, you know, correct me if this is the wrong conclusion to reach, but the more I look at it, all I can see is that the only reason that parliamentary democracy, mass franchised democracy, functions or has functioned in the UK is because nobody has any real in-group interest.
Yeah, pretty much. Because other than the working class one that kept Labour alive, but pretty much, yeah.
But even then, like, you wouldn't. I don't think you'd really find like trade unions stuffing a ballot box as such. Like, they didn't have to, because they knew that in their like in their industrial town, everyone's going to be voting Labour anyway. You don't need to rig it. But I mean, if you had a situation in which there was a bit more like tribal loyalty in any sense, then voting and democracy just doesn't function, does it? Because everyone would, because of course, if you're some Muslim cleric basically running your like fiefdom of Bradford or whatever, or Leicester, I mean, you don't give a damn what the, you know, about British constitutional law or democracy. Of course you're just going to cheat, because why wouldn't you? It's in your interest to. You don't care about anything else. Well, all you care about is your community and your influence. Well,
those people don't believe in democracy. It's no wonder that they just rig it.
Yeah.
I mean, they literally have, I mean, not quite bits from the Quran, but from later texts that basically completely denounce the notion of democracy in any way, shape or form.
Well, I mean, correctly so, but the thing is, as well, I'm trying to think of it, because some people would say, oh, that's because we in the UK are civilized, so we can have democracy. I don't think it's civilization so much as just placidity.
Mm.
You know, it's like, to me, the sign of a healthy people is that if you impose democracy upon them, they'll just cheat in their own interest, because they have an in-group to fight for and something that they believe in other than themselves. The modern Britain has no in-group. The modern European, the modern kind of Anglo-Saxon white, or even the Celts now. You know, how come we don't see the Welsh or the Scots, you know, stuffing the ballot boxes to throw a punch against English?
It's as we said before, though, they've had their tolerance and their good faith for their fellow man subverted and inverted into a love for the other and a sacrificing for the other.
I mean,
a large part of it is just how much further along we are in like the mass society stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get to that point, once we got to the point of, you know, of a weak monarchy and essentially the parliamentarians taking over, the lords being castrated, and then you get into the 1920s, you talked about Labour. Labour hasn't been an insurgent party in a self-interest and kind of in-group interest way since the 1910s.
In the
1920s, in the interwar years, they were brought very, very clearly into the establishment of British Party. They were able to form a government with other parties in it. Which is a sign of someone that is not insurgent and it is in
All of
fact completely establishment.
the labor leaders finished their careers and were given knighthoods and
Yes,
peerages. You know, they were brought well into the bosom of the establishment.
they
Well,
were
they, well,
subsumed
it's
into it, yes.
essentially the Tories just needed a replacement for the Liberal Party
Yes, they did.
after they collapsed. You know.
So they served, they became the official opposition. They really
Yeah.
just took up the role of the Liberal Party.
Exactly.
And it's this idea that once you get past that point, is that we're kind of just further along the pipeline of being pacified, all right? Once you get past that point of having to exercise control in your everyday life and you surrender that to a higher power, then of course, it's also how the Muslim and Hindu minorities in certain areas are able to exercise such control despite not being a majority in many of these areas in a raw sense. They exercise their in-group preference and so are able to punch far above their weight compared to the native
Yes,
interests.
exactly.
That's how
I
they're able
mean,
to carve out their enclaves.
you know, to paraphrase Chesterton's Ballad of the White Horse, I bring you naught for your comfort, nay, naught for your desire. Other than the sea grows, I think sea grows stormier and the waves grow higher or something like that. But essentially, the point is that, as Bowden said, the only way out of this, if you're an English person or a Welshman or a Scotsman or a white Briton in some way, the only way out is to just do what they're doing. Develop an in-group, develop a radicalism, develop a sense of identity and play the dirty game. Because
Well,
there's no other way out.
I think
You
that's
either
what we're
you're...
on the simple sort of first steps of, though. You know, we
Oh, of
are
course.
bringing ourselves together consciously with the intention of at least achieving something.
Well, yes, because I mean the options are fight and try and stop what's going to happen with the demographic bombs that have been planted, or do nothing.
I think that there's a great. I actually found the article. It's from 2017, by the way, when they were buying these armored vehicles.
Is it?
Whilst you were tweeting about Anita Sarkeesian, West Yorkshire Police was buying armored vehicles. That it says at the end here, these £100,000 machines are capable of withstanding blasts from rocket-propelled grenades, hand grenades, and high-caliber rifle rounds, and can carry 10 officers. What? Why does West Yorkshire Police need a vehicle that can withstand an RPG
Especially in
firing?
a country where guns are illegal, there shouldn't be
Yes.
any.
Oh, look, because as we know, to answer the obvious question here, is because these Muslim communities, the leaders of these communities, have basically unlimited power. There is no check on their power, essentially. If they want to import anything from abroad, what's going to stop them? They will have contacts all over the country. You know, if you're the most important mufti in Bradford or Leicester, you can do what you want. There's like the British state either is terrified of you or ignores you and just wants you to get on with what you're doing. So get on with what you're doing if you want to, you know. I mean, this is it seems silly. We've yet to see Muslims firing an RPG at a British police van. But if they wanted to, wouldn't really be stopped. You know, I'm sure that they could quite easily get whatever armaments they wanted.
Well, there's something to be said as well. It was France, but people just forget about the Paris attacks. There was like an armed raid on Paris, from people who were ostensibly from Brussels, which is kind of funny. A lot of it took place in the heart of the EU, which is a big thonk. But like people did just parade around Paris with like AKs, just mowing people down for hours on end.
Well, because
Like literally hundreds of people.
the regime has nothing to stop this, because its priorities are obviously completely skewed. It doesn't. There's nothing it can do about this. If they're lucky, if the intelligence services catch on that somebody's importing a bunch of weapons into the middle of the country, and that's it. You've got a bit of luck in that regard, and that's it, basically. And even in that case, the intelligence services are probably not very competent anyway. They're probably too busy, you know, trying to find right-wing
Well,
kids on the internet.
if you keep up with what's happening in Dover, you know, over the last couple of weeks, because I think there's been sort of calmer seas and whatnot, There's been upwards of 200-300 people arriving a day. Where are they processing these people? Are they searching them? Are they searching the craft that they land in?
I mean, it's people. Again, it is quite baffling, isn't it? Because there is a literal state industry devoted to processing hundreds of people that arrive a day, hundreds of thousands a year, finding them accommodation, jobs, giving them money. I mean, if you're brown and you arrive on the beach, it's a cakewalk. There's nothing stopping you.
Well, no, this is the... I mean, I suppose it gives me an excuse to go back to the circle thing, because I find this very interesting. Sorry, on the face of it, it sounds like a bit like rank punditry, but the scheme itself just seems like a complete... You know, there is no other reason for you to do this other than that you hate British natives. Where Serco are essentially offering both private and institutional renters the opportunity to sign their properties to a 5-year lease, then Serco, through probably G4S or someone else, will move migrants into your property, guarantee a payment and all fees and all servicing on that property for 5 years. So if you are, you know, I don't know, maybe a student, someone that's travelling and trying to be a, you know, a young professional that hasn't got lots and lots of liquid cash behind you and you can't afford a house, good luck getting a flat anywhere.
Because they're just filling it up with refugees. I mean, yeah. And the other thing, I mean, who was I talking to the other day that told me this? It may have been on AA's channel. Somebody was talking about this. How in the UK, if you're a house developer and you build, say, 6 houses...
Yeah, I think this was actually us that was talking about this. The fact that 40% of all housing now has to be council houses.
Yeah,
and much of that then has to be offered to asylees.
It's terrible because, yeah, for some reason, the example I was listening to, they said it was per every 6 houses, 3 of them have to go to the council. The council have to, by law, they will be bought off you at a rate far, far lower than the market rate. And of course, what this means is that, you know, like, the average housing developer, obviously, you know, if you look at it through economic logic, you'll say, oh, well, you know, yes, they do, but they don't necessarily want there to be a housing crisis as such. But if you develop 6 houses and the government takes 3 for less money than it costs you to build them, you're going to have to charge exorbitant prices and rent on the 3 you got left, haven't you? Because you've got to make up the cost for the other lot.
Oh, no, that won't happen. People will just pay for it.
Well, I mean, if the option is for having a house and not having a house, then they will, yeah.
It's something we've talked about at length, and the reason for that is because the developer only gets planning permission if they apply through a government scheme, basically. Like, the planning permission and the funding for those houses will partially come from the government. That's how they're able to impose those terms. But because of the difference in economic viability between subsidized and non-subsidized projects, subsidized projects will always win out. Just through the fact that they are subsidized and are able to mitigate costs and give higher bids that way. I experience it in my daily job. We talked about it during our stream with Clossington. We talked about it at length during the Infinite Counselor Estate stream. That's what that stream is about.
Yeah.
But yeah, it might have been us. It might have not been us, because I'm sure other people have picked up on this too. But you're right. In certain developments, it can be as high as 50%. But the ballpark number I've heard in London high-rise developments is about 20%, which is enough to make it into a nightmare crime building, like RoboCop tier. Like the Judge Dredd movie. Yeah, I know. I will say the image you've got up is very funny of the large format spam cans in the
security cases,
the basketball American proof cases. Yes.
So, but why do they have to? This image confuses me slightly. People in the chat will have seen this. It's the tins of spam in giant plastic cubes, basically. But if you're just going to nick the spam, why can't you just nick the box?
Because the box is alarmed.
Yeah, it does. It sets up the alarms.
Yeah, but doesn't the average jogger just, like, nab it and run?
Like,
much of a difference, would it? Well, is like the fat 40-year-old security guard going to come running
It
after
makes it harder to shoplift. It means that's probably the only item you're stealing.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, is it to the point now where they're nicking spam?
Well, see, that's what the boxes suggest, which is a funny enough thing to ruminate on its own, which is why I was kind of just willing to put it up and hope no one mentioned it, just to see what chat would think of it.
I mean, you know, there was a time in my life when I was a lot thinner than I am now, and when I was a student and didn't have any money, I would sometimes go a few days without food. Now, if my and that was, a lot of the time, I would have like a few quid, but all I could afford was like spam tier stuff, and I would go hungry before I would go and buy a tin of spam. I mean, it really isn't that good, you know.
It's horrible. I'm not a spam fan.
Like, is this something that, like, you know how basketball Americans, they love menthol cigarettes and stuff, right? They have like a, for some reason, their genes give them like a craving for menthol fags, right? Well, is there some link between Afro-Americans and spam that I'm not aware of? Can somebody in the chat?
I'm not so sure about that, but I can answer you on the menthol thing. It's a blacks copying gays and then white women copying blacks or something like that is how you get the cycle of menthol intaking.
It's a big game of like cultural telephone.
Yeah, no, basically.
Sorry, can you go into that a bit more? I'm genuinely.
Well, just the notion that cultural influences go from gay men replicating the. Oh, sorry. Black men replicating the behaviours of gay men, and then women replicating the behaviours of black men because they think it's funny.
Right, okay.
There's no great theory to this, it's just a bit of a meme, really.
I was convinced it was some, like, West African genetic thing that just made you crave menthol. I don't know.
Maybe. It's also just, like, marketing, and there's weird... like monkey see monkey do, if excuse the expression, that was intentional.
I was gonna say you're gonna get the stream views, so. So
there's a lot of copycat behavior of one group will start doing it and then it'll just become almost like a self-spreading meme. But I can't answer. It's one of life's, one of nature's mysteries. But from what I know about store procurement and store management, they only put things in those security boxes if there has been a pattern of theft of the item. So that implies a large spam heist at some point in that store, which makes it funnier. Yeah, thank you, Brian E. I smoke because the Flintstones told me to. it's like the Winnie the Pooh movie. It's like smoking because you're addicted to nicotine. Smoking because the Flintstones told you to.
I'm a pure supporter of Marlboro Red, Big Tobacco. I would actually bring back smoking adverts, because when I was a kid, I had some VHS tapes of like old shows. That had been
recorded. God, yes.
And I think this was after the ban on tobacco-related products when I was growing up. But I had all these old tobacco adverts that had been recorded on the tapes. And I had like the Hamlet cigar advert with like the... Who's that Scottish comedian?
It's not Billy Connolly, is it?
No, it was he did the Rabsy Nesbitt, I think.
Oh, I know who you're talking about now.
He used to do the adverts for Hamlet cigars, where he would get into like a he had like a terrible comb over, and he would get into like a stressful situation, and he would take out a Hamlet cigar and smoke it, and it would just say, "Happiness is a cigar called Hamlet." And there was a wonderful Benson and Hedges advert where it was these two cats in an office, like a big plush office. And the cats were...
I remember this one.
They were Mr. Benson and Mr. Hedges. and they talked in these very upper-class English accents about how wonderful their cigarettes were. And in fact, my mother is a lifelong Benson and Hedges smoker. So I've grown accustomed, from birth to now, I've grown accustomed to the wonderful aroma of a Benson and Hedges cigarette. And yes... That's today's sponsor, everyone. Benson and Hedges cigarettes.
See, I wish we could get a tobacco sponsor, but maybe someone in the currently in the conversation might be onto something about that.
Yeah.
Greg Moore Fisher, by the way, someone said in the chat, this is the Scottish.
Yes, I was never exposed. I had them on all VHS tapes, and they were like a curiosity. But my main exposure through like American media, honestly, is like fictional cigarette brands, which I find hilarious and fascinating.
Morley's.
Yeah, because X-Files has the smoking man who smokes Morley's, which are the Mal and there's also the
Tarantino
Simpsons with
and Red
Laramie and Laramie Juniors,
Yeah.
which are their child-focused cigarette.
And of course, it's represented by a camel, which is a dig at the actual
Campbell's,
camel
yeah.
cigars, which are very good, by the way. A lot of people have mixed feelings, but I like camel. I'm not really a cigarette smoker. I'm into
It's
pipe cigars, but.
got to be a drum roly. There's absolutely nothing better than it.
So this is the drum pipe tobacco that you get in Scotland and nowhere else. That you roll up into a fag, is it? Is that what's going on?
2 ounce of drum lead.
2 ounce of rum, please.
It smells like nice smoked. It smells like smoked wood, basically. It smells actually smells quite good.
I still haven't tried it. Can you if when I see you in London, can you bring me down some Scotch rum as a gift?
I'll have tobacco anyway. I'll roll you a rollie.
All right, and
Yeah, it's just a.
I'll bring you some Shergar or something.
Yeah, there we
Maybe.
go. And then James Murray, 9 out of 10 NRX podcasters recommend Camel.
Can we please try and get sponsorship for the right from tobacco companies? Because no, because here's the thing. This is a serious point. At the event this year, I noticed different to last year, everybody was smoking cigars, pipes, everything was coming out. Everyone was smoking. The dissident right has claimed smoking. You know,
We are the
it's like
smokers.
90-year-old men and us who are keeping pipe tobacco going, who are keeping cigars going. Young people now, they don't smoke anything. They vape and they have a bit of weed. We are the ones keeping the tobacco industry alive, and I want my cut of that share.
Yeah, I want my pound of Virginia flesh, please.
So
Yeah,
are you a cutter and you prefer your own choice?
What was I gonna say? You know how sometimes you'll get people who get the most random sponsorships.
Yeah.
Because Ren-esque in the chat mentioned that Roger Scruton was like sponsored by Japan Tobacco for like 10 years for some
Yes.
reason. He was just like a fully paid up Japan Tobacco guy. There's a brilliant historian called Dr. Gordon Corrigan, who, if you look up his lectures on YouTube, they're incredible, by the way. Brilliant speaker, sort of old English. Well, he's not actually, I think he might be Irish, but he's a old sort of English style toff, you know, hates political correctness. Well, just like every for some reason he
Bless.
hates Bulgarians, and every time he mentions like the Bulgarian campaign in World War One, he goes off on this tangent about how ugly Bulgarians
I'm not a fan of, but having
were.
had to deal with Bulgarian migrant workers, I am also not a fan of Bulgarians, so.
Well, I asked the guy who lived there's a German who comes to the event every year who lived in Bulgaria, or I think might be partly Bulgarian. I asked him this, and he was like, "Yeah, Bulgarian women are disgusting." But so that might be true. But he, for some reason, if you go on YouTube and look up his lectures, he did a whole really good series of lectures on World War One, sponsored by like a Russian luxury train line,
That's based. That's really based.
it's called like Double Eagle Luxury Trains, and it's like this Russian, like Orient Express style luxury railway
Oh.
company that decided to just pick out this random obscure English historian and sponsor him to make videos. And what I'm
It.
saying is, if that can happen, I want Havana House. I want Monte Cristo. I want Punch. I want Imperial Tobacco. I want them
Well,
sponsoring us. I want them
yeah.
sponsoring me. You
Being a reactionary is about smoking. The more you smoke,
The
the
more
more reactionary
reactionary you're,
you
yeah.
are.
The bigger
That's
your
how I want it.
stogie, the more reactionary you are.
You can write that on my grave as like my number one quote when I die.
It beats other activities. I do. All we need to do now is co-opt drink driving as well. No.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, drink driving was once the norm in certain parts of the country, I've been told. I'm looking at you, Evelyn.
No, it's drink driving was the norm up until like the 1980s, really.
Because people would have like 10 pints in the pub and then they just drive home.
Oh, no, it's perfectly valid that. How else are you meant to get home? You're gonna get a taxi. That costs a fortune.
Just before we move on, Rick Farwell in the chat has mentioned Bengal slices, a legendary tobacco which has recently been reintroduced. And I think that in honor of the recent happenings in the UK, with a few Bengal slices going around, I think everyone should buy a tin of Bengal slices, because they're actually the logo on the tin is designed to look like the Bengal Lancers, which was a cavalry regiment of the British Indian Army. So it's a, and I've ordered a tin. I've ordered that and a tin of Presbyterian mixture, which was Stanley Baldwin's old mix, and I'm told it's wonderful. It was like a private mix for some Scottish clergyman who was friends with Stanley Baldwin, and Stanley Baldwin liked it so much that he used to get it mixed and then send it down to him specially. And then they commercialized it, and it became the Presbyterian mixture.
We do need to get sponsorship. Like, we need fine whiskey, fine tobacco, knife companies, bespoke shotguns, bespoke suits.
Well,
We
I
just
mean.
basically we basically go to everyone who's like trying to sell high society stuff,
Well,
and we
see, yeah,
go, look.
this is something I was thinking. Maybe when it comes to the event stuff, we haven't been bold enough. I was watching a very nice video of the guy who rebuilds Harry Metcalfe's bloody Lamborghini Countach, on the Waverley, and he was talking to loads of people about the history and the engineering. It reminded me, you can hire out the Waverley. You can hire out the whole boat. I'm just imagining the most spectacular Nomos event where we just sort of putter about on the only seafaring steamship across the Western Isles in Scotland, few speeches, fully catered meal, and then, just get pissed on the rear
Yeah,
end of the ship.
boat party.
Smoke a few cigars. Yeah.
Be incredible. I'll roll out my blue blazer and white trousers and get a little cap, and we'll have we'll make a whole week of it.
We'll all get very maritime.
Yeah, exactly. We you have to wear something maritimey, to go on the boat.
Go on a grouse shoot. Apparently, it's completely exempt from all kinds of rules as well. Just,
It is.
just.
It is. I can yes. The grouse pheasant shooting is pretty li I mean, the thing is, it, when you go to the country and you go to like a shooting club, or you join one of the hunts or something, it is just a bunch of blokes in tweed firing shotguns into a forest. I mean, that
Yep.
like it's fun. It's very I've been on a load of shoots in my life. Great fun. Recommend it to anybody. If you know any farmers and you're friends with them, ask to go on a shoot with them. It'll be great fun.
Sorry,
Just
who's
shoot
this?
vermin.
Who's this in the chat, Mandaras, that's saying rollies are pretty gay? Excuse me, you're privileged to hear us and be here. You will not
You will not
last long
besmirch.
saying things like that.
You will
You
never
will
take a
not.
Scots rollies away.
You
Nah.
will not besmirch the rollie. It is the anywhere above Birmingham, it is the means of survival if
Nah,
you're working there.
you can have my land, you can have my tartan, but you'll never have my snout.
You'll
You'll
can have
never take.
my bottle of Bucky and a fiver deal,
Aye.
but you'll never take the never take
God,
the rollies.
they have basically taken the bucky from the Scotsman now. The
Really?
minimum unit pricing.
Yeah,
Like, a
pretty
bottle of
much.
Buckfast in Scotland is like 20 quid.
It's not
That's
that bad. It
terrible.
went from about £7.50 to about a tenner.
Okay.
They've put it up again though, haven't they?
It's still cheap here. You can get a bottle here for very pretty much nothing. Here in Wales.
Yeah, there's cows. I don't know anyone who rolls tobacco in the US. You can tell your story about fucking Alabama again,
Oh
and people
yeah.
being absolutely amazed by the fact that you did rollies. Like, people thought you were a wizard.
No, they do genuinely believe that like you are beyond other people because you they don't just see it as like, I get my pouch out, I get my skins, my filter, and I roll a cigarette. They see it as like, oh my God, you've just taken the years process it takes to create a cigarette factory and reduced it into a process within your small hands. It's like, how have you done that? It's magic. That, and then obviously, only person I met over there that smoked rollies is Tho Bishop.
Really?
Yeah, because he tried to, he does it as like a trendy thing because all the Florida man people are like trying to be like trendy old southerners, i.e. trying to be Scots that smoked
Yeah,
rollies.
basically.
I've got to say, as somebody who is usually a wheezing asthmatic, it's been very good getting more into cigars. I honestly thought like cigars were something people forced themselves to enjoy. I was not
No,
cultured.
absolutely
And
not. They're delicious things.
then having now been a cigar smoker for the best part of a year, it is definitely worth it. Even if like I am the least equipped person to smoke. Being somebody with like lung scarring and like I don't have the worst asthma in the world, but I do still, I will never have like normal lungs because of like childhood
Well,
pneumonia. But cigars are really good to smoke. They're not harsh, really.
I've told the story many times before, and I know that today, with my oncoming case of consumption, that it may seem somewhat ironic. But cigars and pipe smoking cured my asthma. I had asthma all through my teens, and started smoking, went away pretty much, didn't, and it hasn't really ever come back.
Based,
Yeah, it
incredibly
will do that.
based.
And in fact, I'm not the only one that's testified to this. Lots of other people have said similar things. Notably, one Ernesto Che Guevara. I was reading a book about him a few years ago, and he said he had this awful, awful asthma, and he took up smoking, of course, the famous Cuban cigar, and asthma went away.
By the way, if the authorities are listening, this is medical advice and you should start smoking.
Smoking
Yes.
is good for you. Smoking is
No,
good for your
smoking
health.
is. That was one of the things literally I talked to Jeff Deist about at one point. He was just like, yeah, smoking's cool and it's good for you. Nicotine's
It's
good for you.
very good for you. Tobacco is good for you. The Indians, the American Indians, the original tobacco smokers used it as a healing agent
They
and a
do
symbol
smoke
of
and peace
peace.
pipe.
It's a meditative thing. It's good for your brain processes. Every day, when I sit at my desk to crank out in the next couple of hundred or 1,000 words or whatever I'm doing, I can't do it without a bowl full of tobacco or a cigar.
You can't do it. You heard it here first. Panama
Can't
Heart
do it.
can't write without smoking a bowl.
I have to,
He's
always
got a
couldn't do it without it.
dependency.
I do. I do. It gets the cogs in the brain turning, and all of the 98-year-old men that live to that age in my family, chain cigar smokers. Like from dawn to dusk, just never without a cigar, as far as I saw them. There must be some healing property in tobacco that they just won't tell us about, I think. There
But
must
why
be
do you think
something
they
to
would
help.
ban it and make it so expensive?
Exactly.
If it
They
was actually, going to kill us, and by us I mean like good people, they would sell it to us like hotcakes, but they don't. So you should, that's all you need to know.
What the regime wants is for you to be a weed smoking, milkshake drinking, vegan soy man, basically, who doesn't indulge in the liberty granting pleasures of tobacco and whiskey and stuff like that. They don't want you to be that. That's why they have people like Drakeford who just want Wales to be dry. They just want it to be a big prohibition region.
Horrible people.
Yeah.
They just have no sense of fun. There is really no sense of even like I don't know. The Bugman thing is just so miserable. There's no humor to it. It is just
They
I don't
will
know. It,
reduce your life to that. And w the
yeah.
answer, the question to you is, will you let them?
It's like Nintendo Butlins almost. It's like the
Worse than that.
world's
Worse than that.
crappiest
No, because
subsistence.
it's what George Orwell said about the drift of the world in the last few hundred years being towards a form of slavery, basically. I recently tweeted out a bunch of pages from a biography of Chesterton, which is written by somebody that knew him, which wonderfully summed up his thinking around the history of England and the fact that once upon a time you had this huge class of yeomanry, which were basically men who owned small but not insignificant plots of land, who composed kind of the backbone of the country, essentially. And these were kind of, again, yeomen. I believe it's the meaning of that is literally freemen, the yeomanry, the free men, who aren't serfs or anything. And even the serfs had more than the modern man does now. They had certain liberties. They had an independence by way of their property and by way of their status in the kingdom, and they were largely wiped out by the Reformation because when the abbeys and the monasteries were dissolved, it meant that all of the colossal church-administered plots of land fell into the hands of private landowners, who basically abolished the yeomanry by force and became what we then would know as the landed gentry. That's why all these like great manor houses are called something abbey or something rectory, because they once were literally an abbey or a rectory, or they were owned by the church as basically common land. And so it basically where I'm headed with all this is that the bug man is the opposite of that. We've been trending towards that, where it's this totally fungible, familyless, cultureless, completely adrift, unhealthy speck in his pod, eating larvae protein. It's the furthest you can get from the archetype of the yeoman.
I will add to that as well that the solution, the modern conservative, and even those who are part of the, let's be generous and call them the anti-SJW sphere or the anti-woke sphere, that their version of conservatism is just that, except you don't have to paint the trans flag on the side of your pod. Like I've been
Yeah,
saying
basically.
this, and I will continue saying this, that Ben Shapiro is going to come out like John the Baptist returning from the desert with a proclamation and say that we've done it, guys. We've saved the West. You will no longer have to paint the trans flag on the side of your pod. This is the conservative victory we've all
But
been
we
waiting
are going to
for.
raise taxes so that we can send more money to Israel.
I'm
Well, of
afraid that's the
course,
compromise we have to make in
that's the
order.
price we pay to live in society.
There's, I guess, there's one more thing before we round out. Sorry,
I
I don't
have
want to.
closed all the links anyway.
There's, I just went to do the CIA podcast.
That nonsense.
CIA
Yeah, we can.
podcast.
Apparently, the CIA has an official podcast now, and it's called The Langley Files.
See, I need to
I'm
scroll back now because I've been posting too many memes in the general chat.
tap assistant. Right, is that the official CIA tw Twitter
Yes, it
account?
is.
Yes, it is.
The Langley Files, CIA's official podcast, episode one is now available. Listen to CIA director William J. Burns bring the CIA out of the shadows as we celebrate our
Celebrates.
75th year of serving the nation.
It's literally an agency that has like admitted to the serial rape of children and the assassination of entire families.
It's just the Fed. It's just the agency. It's just
Yeah. Welcome to the state power, comrade. We have a
glowy
podcast now.
Terrible, terrible. Also, sorry, this is very unprofessional of me to do this on a live stream. I genuinely apologize for this, but just because I know I'm going to forget otherwise. Narco Republican in the chat, do you mind if you and I do like an interview on my channel, or we just sit and talk about like South American reactionaries or something? Send me a Twitter DM because I want to arrange that with you before I forget. Sorry,
Oh, that's fine.
very,
No,
very unprofessional to
It's community and friend
manage to
based. If anything,
manage
it
my.
fits the theme.
It's the one thing I can refrain from doing. It's like the recommended shit in like Daily Mail articles. Trending in United Kingdom. Halal. Stormzy. What's happening? Protests continue in Iran after death of Mahsa and Amini in police custody. So, color revolution, gay hip hop, Islamism.
Okay, that's
Britain,
it.
Britain wrapped
Okay.
up in one.
Sounds like it to me.
Before we go, there's a couple more donations we've got here.
Go
One
ahead.
more from Glowy, just saying that liberal democracy is Martin Bailey, and that liberalism is it accepts is accepted of everyone and every desire. People we don't agree with. He's basically going into the tolerance of intolerance stuff there. But yeah, that is the stuff that we make fun of here, and that is the stuff we talk about. I don't know. It is a bit about the distinction between modern liberalism in quotes and the liberalism of the 18th century. But thank you for the other donation there, Chloe. There's another donation here saying Jordan Peterson had Ben worm yeah had Ben effectively wormed something in his ear. Israel is good, Broomer isn't good. And then wait a minute, when people stopped smoking in traditional ways, our cancer rates went up. It wasn't that bad when processed cigars, with no processed cigarettes and cigars only handcrafted. Yeah, you
I
it. They
agree.
basically are right. They basically gave people fucking the plastic filters and like the packing agents, the horrendous packing agents in cigarettes. Is there anything that you want to shill? Mr. Panama Hat, before we depart the from the, this stream coil.
All I'll say is that I will be starting a second channel soon. For the reason that I've always viewed YouTube as a kind of like perfect like Brit man like hobby type thing, where you just upload random videos of things that interest you or things that you're doing, and it becomes interesting over time. So what I've done is I've started another channel. Well, I won't link it yet because there's nothing on it, and I'm still in the process of making it. So my main channel will still continue to just be the videos that I normally have with, essays on, art, poetry, Ebola, Christianity, whatever. Then the second channel will be like, if I do a live stream with somebody or interview them or just chat with somebody or make a video about tobacco or, I don't know, something mechanical
We should
related,
just, but just
any
do
odd
streams where
topic.
you just smoke. There's like
Yeah,
there's no other content. There's just
that could be
smoking, odd sip of
talking.
whiskey.
Well, the thing, I was thinking of doing that and just sort of like setting up a camera, pointing it like outside at the nice view, having a smoke, or just you can see my hand or something, and just talking about some random thing that day.
You
Or
just see the cloud of smoke go across
you
the
just
camera.
see the smoke. Or, because the other thing is, this is going to sound daft, but I've recently gotten into motorcycling again, and I hopefully in a couple of weeks I'll have some new wheels. So what I was thinking
Ooh.
of doing is doing one of those things people do where they have like a camera mic in their helmet and like just like ride around the Welsh countryside, just like rambling about Heidegger into a motorcycle helmet. Just any old thing to keep it interesting,
That's the I would watch. Like, this sounds intensely interesting, better than most of the other stuff that I watch, and I would watch the hell out of it. Your existing stuff is linked in the description, though. We've got your YouTube channel linked here, your I guess primary channel. I guess your secondary channel will be announced on there, and we've got your Twitter linked. So those are the two links I've already put
Oh,
in there.
I have
If you
to.
want to follow, sorry, go on.
I have to say, this is not really. I was quite pleased with the name that I came up with for the second channel.
Oh, what is
I've called it Mr. Hat's Other Head. I was quite pleased with that.
that sounds like you're talking about something else, but
I'm not talking about something else though. So, two heads are better than one, is the joke.
Mr. Hat's Other Head.
Like a dog with two motorbikes.
You could create a motorbike. You should create a motorbike specific channel that could just be called Mr. Hat's Helmet. But
No, we're not going there.
no, it'd be Panama Helmet.
Panama Helmet.
My helmet. Yeah, there you go.
More like Panama Helmet. Got him.
Panama leather helmet.
I'm gonna make sure to mention for any of those who didn't hear it at the start of the stream. Panama Hat will, of course, be joining us and speaking at Nomos, London, at the end of next month on the 29th of October. There are both early bird and standard tickets still available. Also, keep your ears peeled for further announcements over the next couple weeks. And I think, as I said earlier on, when those announcements do go out, the tickets might move quite quickly. So if you're considering it, I would pick them up just now.
Yes. One more, I think, donation just about the glow ups. They said, "Come watch our podcast, guys. No gay ops here." So yeah, I would not advise watching a CIA, a directly CIA podcast, though. That's a great way to get MK Ultra'd. they're just jumping in the
Yeah,
boat.
they're
We
going to
don't even
have
need
subliminal sissy hypno-messaging throughout the entire podcast, probably.
raids. Oh no. Anyway, thank you for watching, friends. Thank you for coming on Panama Hat.
Thank you very much.
No worries.
Yes.
It's always a pleasure. I would love to just do more streams like this where we just ramble for 2 hours about
See,
things.
if we don't have a topic for a Monday stream, I would happily make it a more regular thing that we just have a blether on a Monday.
Just
Yeah, we'll try and get people together and blather.
the Monday whinge would just be a perfect
Monday
start. I think
moan. The Monday moan.
if like even if it's just like of an afternoon and you haven't got anything, just send me a text, honestly. Just message me. I'll be straight on to just come and just shoot the shit
The
on this channel.
Moan Day stream, yes.
Exactly.
Monday.
That's terrible, I know. But I'm actually gonna end the stream now, guys. So
Whinge at the cringe.
Yes, the whinge at the cringe. So goodbye, and we hope to see you. Well, we're looking forward to seeing you at Nomos, on my hat, but we'll look forward to
Thank
see
you.
some of our audience members there. You have yourselves a very good Thursday evening, and good night from the UK.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody.
Oh, there we go.